Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right, we're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 140 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Action Comics 1008, Detective Comics 999, Heroes in Crisis number 6, Justice League Odyssey number 6, Shazam number 3, Flash number 65, Terrifics number 13, Wonder Woman number 65, Supergirl season 4 episode 13, What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way? Arrow, Season 7, Episode 14, Brothers and Sisters. Black Lightning, Season 2, Episode 14, The Book of Secrets, Chapter 4, Original Sin. Flash, Season 5, Episode 15, King Shark vs. Gorilla Grodd. And Doom Patrol, Season 1, Episode 4, Colt Patrol. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, coming up first for DC News. A Green Arrow relaunch reset is coming from DC. A new Green Arrow title is in development, with DC planning to make the character a bigger part of the DCU, according to co-publisher Dan Didio. Current Green Arrow writer Jackson Lansing recently tweeted that he and co-writer Colin Kelly were originally hired to begin a long run on the title, beginning with number 48. But after writing half of the first issue of number 49, we're told by DC editorial that the run and the title would be truncated to end with number 50. How would you like that? You just get signed on to do a big run on a title. Oh, halfway through the second issue. Yeah, we're ending this series.
I think it explains a lot, to be honest with you, because I thought that Vertigo run was cut short. That the arc seems shorter than it should have been. And then this issue 50, clearly, I think we both agree, is just like pretty out of nowhere. Basically just a way for them to wrap up the series. I don't get it. Rebooting series has a short-term benefit of like your number one issue is going to get a small spike in sales. But in the long run, it's never been proven to be worth it. I don't know why Marvel and DC both companies are equally guilty of this. It's stupid. Just keep the title going. Like, if you need to take a hiatus for a little bit, fine. But why renumber it?
Yeah, they could easily launch their new story off in issue number 51, or even use number 50.
I understand. It's one of those things. It's stupid because the sales blip that they're going to get cannot possibly be that much to make it worth it. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Whatever. I mean, it's not like they're doing something disastrously stupid or anything like that. But it's just, what's the point? Like, if you're going to continue the Green Arrow title, just continue it. If you already had the creative team, so there really doesn't seem to be any reason to take a hiatus. From what it seems like number one's going to pop up relatively soon.
So, I didn't specifically say that. Do you think a new creative team is going to be on this new title?
No, it's from my understanding of what I read, it's that same writing team. Maybe they're going to, I don't know. Maybe they're, the statement from Dan Didio made it seem like Green Arrow was going to maybe be in Justice League or something. They said just like reincorporate him into the wider DC universe, so maybe he's going to pop up in a team book for a little bit, but like, it's just It's just, I don't get the point. I don't get the point. I understand. I am sure that the sales for that title were not great, and that's why it's happening. But if you're just going to ultimately relaunch it into a new book, why?
Yeah, I don't know.
Unless the plan is to release it into a mini series, and that's number one, then I get it. But if you're just going to relaunch a new monthly series, what's the point? Like, just keep the numbering going.
Yeah. Well, it didn't sound like it was going to be a mini series to me, but well, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I agree. Yeah, I don't think it is going to be either, but that's really the only reason it would make sense to cancel the current numbering and restart it is if you're following it up with a mini series, which, to be honest, is really how Green Arrow should probably be being published.
And what's ridiculous is they just relaunched all the titles back in 2016, which was, what, 3 years ago? Or not quite, yeah. 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't. It's getting irritating is what it is.
Well, it annoys, it almost universally annoys people. It's not something that anybody in the consumer market enjoys. I don't think anybody is like, oh, sweet, they're renumbering Batman or they're renumbering Wonder Woman. Awesome. Like, it's one of those things. It's a purely business-driven move that doesn't have that big of a reward. That's the thing I don't get. It's such a short-term, short-sighted benefit that they keep, both Marvel and DC keep going back to that well, and it keeps being less and less beneficial. Like, the first time that you renumber something to number one, there's a pretty big spike. And I'm like, oh my God, we have to do this again for other titles. And then you do it a second and third time, you just start to annoy people. And then people just don't pick up the book because they're like, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, whatever story you're telling is just going to get reset anyway. It's one of those things, they've devalued ongoing titles so much that unless the title is phenomenal, there's really very little for people to invest monthly in all of these titles. When you reboot constantly, 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 you're telling people that whatever story they're spending their money on ultimately doesn't matter. And so unless that story is really, really good, like King's run on Batman or Rucka's Wonder Woman run, unless it's something that's really, really good, there's no point. Might as well just wait and maybe like check out the collected trade, maybe, or just don't read it at all because it didn't really matter anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I know
if
what
you're
you
just going to keep rebooting these series over and over, all you're doing, you're trading very, very short-term benefit of a minor sales spike for a declining readership in the long run. And they keep doing it, and they keep making the situation worse, which is why we're in this situation where most monthly titles shouldn't be monthly titles because nobody buys them. Because why? Why should you? Why should we buy the next Green Arrow title? They're just going to cancel that one too.
Preach it, brother.
I know. But you know, this is the thing that's frustrating. It's like, I'm not the only person saying this. Many, many people are on board with this line of thought. And yet both companies continue to do it. And I don't get it. I don't get why they keep bashing their head against the wall instead of trying something else.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You're preaching to the choir here. All right, let's move on to our next bit of DC news. For Suicide Squad number 2, Idris Elba is to replace Will Smith as Deadshot. I think that's some awesome news.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit surprised that Will Smith is backing out of it. I get maybe being embarrassed to be attached to the first one. I get that. But I feel like generally people are expecting this one to be better. And also, to be honest, critically it was not good. But financially, that was a successful movie. So I'm a little bit surprised that he's backing out of it. But I have to admit, I kind of like the replacement a little bit better. So
I do too. All right, and next up for DC News, back in 1982, Adrian Barbeau played the role of Alice Cable in Wes Craven's Swamp Thing, and the legendary actress announced that she is heading back to the swamps. She'll be appearing in DC Universe's upcoming Swamp Thing series. No details on what character she is playing were revealed, so we don't know what she's going to be doing, but I think that's kind of cool.
It is cool. I mean, I have to admit, DC's pretty good about pulling back old actors. I mean, clearly we've seen that with the CW stuff, but obviously that is carrying over to these DC Universe shows too, which is cool.
Yeah. All right, up next for DC News, Ghostbusters veteran Ernie Hudson will appear in an upcoming episode of Arrow, playing the role of DIA general who has a history with John Diggle. And I can't remember what the DIA stands for, but I think that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you think that maybe it might be John Diggle's father?
Wouldn't surprise me.
Wouldn't surprise
me. They've never really gotten into his family beyond his brother.
Right. So if that's, it might not be, but I was just curious, or it was just my inkling that it might be.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I don't know that it would be necessary, though. I mean, we're 7 seasons into the show. Do we need to meet his dad at this point?
So they got to do something with Diggle now that he's, we'll discuss that more during Arrow. All right, and last up for DC News, the Arrow producers have issued a statement on the show ending after season 8. And season 8 is going to be a shortened 10-episode season.
This was not surprising news, but still a bit of a bummer. Like, I get it. It's probably what's best for the show and what's best for, like, it's pretty clear Stephen Amell was ready to move on. And a lot of the cast members have been moving on, but I love Arrow. I'm going to miss it.
I am too. And that shortened 10-episode season's got me wondering if it's either going to lead into Crisis on Infinite Earth or if we're going to have it before the end of the season and it's just going to wrap up what's left.
I'm very curious about that too. I feel like it would make the most sense for Crisis to happen first and then have one, because it would be kind of weird to have the final episode of the show and then have another episode after that in which those characters are involved. That's clearly going to, like, Oliver's obviously going to factor heavily into that story. It would be kind of bizarre to have, like, the conclusion to his story and then have him play such a major role. You know what I mean? Like, just imagining, like, rewatching this show and you're watching through it. It would be bizarre to get to the end, but then there'd still be, like, the, like, cliffhanger into the crossover. That would be weird to watch it that way. So yeah. I don't know. I could be wrong. I feel like it'll be Crisis and then one final episode that kind of wraps up the ramifications of whatever, whether he dies or not, and that wraps up everything in an episode after that.
I'm excited. I'm excited for season 8, but I'm also saddened by season 8.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk. I'm glad we're not live.
Hello, podcast fans. My name is Chris Jones, and I'm here to tell you about the Nerd Bliss podcast. Now, of all the geek-oriented podcasts out there, we are definitely one of them. Yes, we talk about Star Trek and Star Wars and cosplay and Marvel and DC and the usual. But as geeks, we embrace anyone with very specialized knowledge, like triathletes or improv comedians or musicians. So we try to bring them in and let them share their geekiness with you to help broaden some horizons, and maybe you'll learn something. Maybe we'll learn something. You can find our entire catalog at nerdblisspodcast.com on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play Music, Player FM, and we are now proud to be a part of the ESO Network. Once again, we are the Nerd Bliss Podcast. Thank you, and pod bless.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Action Comics number 1008. All right, Cletus, before we get into the story, I got to point out the terrible art in this issue. And the thing I didn't like the most, I think, was the faces, especially Superman's face on the title page where he's flying. I thought it was terrible. And I even showed it to my youngest, he agreed with me.
I'm just glad that it's not just me. Usually, I feel like I'm the one fighting that fight on the art one, so I'm really happy to hear that it's not me this time. I agree. I didn't like it either.
I mean, the story was fine. It was the artwork, though.
Yep. I mean, this is, you know, this is the thing when you publish bi-monthly. I don't know how much more we can harp on that. This is what happens sometimes.
Yep. All right, so Adam Strange makes a guest appearance, saving Mr. Bones, who I've never really seen this dude before, and other agents at the DEO. And we see the building is leveled by some monster with an energy weapon head. We also see Perry White calls Lois Lane back to the office at the Daily Planet to deal with Jimmy Olsen, who apparently is hiding under the desk in her old office and seems to be having some sort of panic attack. So I found that interesting. And also in this issue, we have Amanda Waller and Sam Lane get attacked, and the building they're in gets leveled also by the same creature. So even though the artwork wasn't the greatest in this issue, I did find the story intriguing.
Yeah, I agree. Clearly, there's a threat taking out a wide variety of targets, right? They took out Cobra last time.
Right.
They continue to target Waller. Yeah, I'm very curious to see. And we know it's Leviathan. And I don't know. I think we've talked about, I don't know if that's referring to the organization Leviathan that has popped up in like the Batman Inc. titles, or if it's a different Leviathan. I'm not sure. But I'm very curious to see where the story goes.
I am too. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Detective Comics number 999. So, Bruce puts himself into an isolation tank and hooks up to a computer program to try and kill himself every year. Happy birthday! What an anticlimactic end to the story.
It was the, like, it was all a dream, but trying to act like it's not, it was all a dream. Like, oh no, this is the smarter version of that. Like, no, it's just as stupid. Arguably stupider than it was all a dream.
Well, it wasn't really a dream. It was a computer
program. No, but you know what I'm saying, though? It's that cliche of like, oh, it was all a dream.
Yeah, because...
But he's trying to make it seem like it's somehow more clever than that, but it's not.
It's not.
Arguably, it's dumber than it just being a dream. Oh my gosh. Like, it was the perfect ending to this story, though. It was just like getting dumber every issue. And then it was just like, what's the only way we could possibly end this dumb story? The dumbest possible conclusion. Oh, God.
I know. I'm glad it's over. Though, the thing I did like the ending to this where Dr. Tompkins, Bruce, and Alfred go out for dinner. I like that ending.
That was Tomasi writing to his strengths there at the end. That was like, why wasn't the whole arc like this? That's his strength, writing those sort of personal moments. That was what you and I both really enjoyed in his Superman run. It's what I've enjoyed in some of his other books. And he wrote away from what I think is his strength as a writer. And what a stupid story.
I know. Now, I think the next issue is supposed to be a giant, you know, it's the 1000th issue of Detective Comics. I think it's supposed to be a giant issue with a bunch of writers in it.
Yeah, it'll be exactly like Action Comics 1000. I had very mixed feelings on that. There were some really good comics in that, but ultimately, I feel like Action Comics 1000 is only collectible from the perspective that it's issue 1000. There's nothing actually like memorable in that comic, and I'm positive that Detective Comics 1000 will be the same way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where, like, it's a, I'm not saying that it will be bad. I'm sure there are going to be some pretty good stories in it. I'm sure there'll be some good art in some of the stories too. But ultimately, like, as an issue, it will be completely inconsequential. Its numbering will be the only, and this is, that was what it was with Action Comics. The only thing consequential in the long run of that was the number. It was issue number 1000. And I think it'll be, and like, obviously you could argue that with other milestone comics, but like, I don't know, sometimes I would like, I would almost rather it be like some major story, like just one story that is somehow, like, I know you can't make something memorable, like you can't guarantee that will actually stick around, but you know, just having it be effectively they're like annuals, which I argue usually aren't usually worth people buying, because you don't know, you're kind of getting a grab bag of stories.
Back in the day, when you used to get to momental issues like 50 or 100 or something like that, you used to get, you know, they bring out the big guns, like it'd be a Joker story, and it'd be a story worth reading, or you'd want to read, or you'd had to get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Or like if it was a Superman story, you know, it'd be some big villain. But nowadays, we're getting the crap we're getting.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I don't, like, I'm honestly not that excited for Detective Comics 1000. I mean, I think it's really cool that it's hitting that issue. Don't get me wrong. That is cool. But I'm not that excited for the issue itself, because it's just going to be basically an annual. It's just going to be a grab bag of stories, that some of which I'm sure will be good, but I mean, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I could read a collected thing of short Batman stories elsewhere. I would have preferred something where, like, this Tomasi run instead led into issue 1000, where it, like, the conclusion was issue 1000. That was a big major issue.
Yeah.
Or just maybe it is just one issue self-contained story, but you use the mega sites like it's 50 pages, and it's just one big 50-page memorable Batman story. That, to me, is much more appealing than what we're going to get.
Yep. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Heroes in Crisis number 6. All right, Cletus, before we get into this issue, I got to ask you, where's my Blue Beetle and Booster Gold team up? I was hoping to see more of that.
I was surprised that some parts of this issue happened at this point. I really liked that we got, much earlier, I can't remember what it was like issue 3 or 4, I think 3, we got Booster Gold's perspective on what happened, and it concluded with him seeing Harley kill Wally. And then in this one, we get the opposite. We get Harley's lead up to it, and then it ends with her seeing Booster kill Wally, which then explains what we see at the beginning of the comic. That was really cool. I'm surprised it happened now, though. I would have thought we would have gotten that sooner.
Yeah.
It does make me very, very curious what actually happened, though. I've been curious about that, but now that I really like seeing her side, because that was cool, too. And now I really want, like, that third issue that shows what's actually happening in that moment.
Yeah, I know, because we've had both of their perspectives. The other thing I thought was weird, who was this caveman dude named Narc? It felt kind of weird being in this, a focus in this issue, but I don't think they're going to really tell us any more about him.
No, I think it was just a self-contained story about him. We've seen this a couple times. I think his was just the latest one. Within this title, we see characters kind of work through their problems, and right as it seems like they're kind of working through it, then the crisis happens. And we see Narc has kind of worked his way through it, right? He's kind of resolved his problems, and then that happens.
Yeah.
So it's kind of showing, what I thought was kind of interesting, was it was showing that this sanctuary was actually working, like it was doing what it was supposed to do. And then something went wrong.
I got a question for you, because I was trying to figure it out. What happened to Poison Ivy? Did she die at Sanctuary? Do you remember seeing her?
She died.
She did die. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought she did, but I wasn't sure. Because
The only two survivors are Harley and Booster.
Okay.
Everybody else dies.
Because they don't really talk about her at all. And I would think she'd be more of a focus for Harley Quinn. You know what I mean? That her best friend's gone.
Well, it's kind of... It's been mentioned, but it's also just kind of carrying through that's why Harley's invested in this. Harley would not care if Ivy hadn't died.
Okay.
That's sort of like her even just motivation for this entire story is that Ivy died in that.
That makes sense. I just didn't think they focused on that enough. That's why what her motivation is.
Well, I have to say, but this is I get that. But I also don't mind that they don't repeatedly mention it. I feel like King is pretty good about saying it and kind of moving on. One thing that bothers me with other writers is that they would keep bringing, like Williamson. If Williamson was writing this, Harley Quinn would go out of her way to mention it every single issue.
That I wouldn't need.
No, but I'm right, though. Let's think of like other Flash titles. He would Barry mentions his motivation every single freaking issue of an arc. And by the end, you're like, I get it, man. Jesus Christ. Like, let's move on. So I have to say, yes, it's kind of understated for Harley Quinn, but I also kind of appreciate that because I really don't need to see Harley Quinn restate her mission every issue.
Yeah, I can see that. Do you know how many issues Heroes in Crisis is supposed to have? Is it supposed to be 12? Is this going to be going on for a while? I'm not sure.
I think it's like 8 or 9. I can't remember. I think it's 9.
Okay. So it's going to be... We're getting towards the end of the story then. I mean, it's been interesting, but I want to get some answers.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Justice League Odyssey number 6. The Ghost Sector is going to hell in a handbasket. We see the source wall has fallen apart, which we saw happen in the Justice League title. But we see what happens in the Ghost Sector when it destroys. We see this wave of destructions. We see it destroy New Genesis, Apocalypse. Of course, those are not in the Ghost Section, but we find out about them being destroyed. It destroys all the new gods except for Darkseid. Apparently, he's the only one left. We see the destruction that happens through the Ghost Sector. Firestar returns home and finds her planet destroyed, and her reunion with her sister does not go well at all, and the Queen of Tamaran orders her forces to attack the team. We also find out Jessica Cruz has got a secret she's been keeping. She hasn't been able to recharge her ring since they entered the Ghost Sector, and she's down to 40% and has no access to her battery. I found that pretty interesting.
I found it interesting, but unnecessary. My least favorite thing writers do with Green Lantern is making them not be able to charge their ring. Like, that story's been done so many times. It's the same thing as finding it, like watching an episode of Supergirl and Kryptonite gets involved. Like, I get it because you're trying to put stakes on the character that they don't normally face, but like, a Green Lantern using their ring is what makes them so interesting. Like, that's what makes a Green Lantern cool, is the fact that they're able to use their ring to do anything they want. And when you limit it, I understand from one perspective you're adding stakes to the story, but from the other perspective you're also hindering what you can do with that character in an issue.
Yeah, she's got to be more conservative about how she uses her ring.
Right, but then what's the point of having Green Lantern in the comic? Like, if you're just going to have somebody who can't use their ring... That's, you know what I'm saying? Like, I see the other side. I don't think that, like, I get why the writer does that. But me personally, like, what I like as a reader, like, I don't really enjoy that much, because I'm like, if you don't want Green Lantern using their ring, then just don't include Green Lantern in your story.
So, yeah, I know. I want to see her do stuff too. But I have to agree with it. We've seen that lots of times before. So,
well, it's like watching episodes. Like, I can only take so many episodes where Barry doesn't have his speed. Like, it's interesting occasionally, but I don't want to see that long term. Like, I watch The Flash because I like seeing super speed hero. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Like, if you're going to include Green Lantern in the title, I want to see Green Lantern be Green Lantern. I don't want to just see somebody wearing the costume swinging a bat around because they can't do anything with their ring.
Fair enough.
And that's just my – I understand. That's only my opinion. I'm not expecting people to necessarily agree with that. The one thing I kind of thought was interesting in this title, though, was that Darkseid's part of the story is definitely told as almost like from a protagonist point of view. Like, you're almost supposed to be rooting for him to succeed. And I thought that was kind of interesting because I'm pretty sure we don't want him to succeed.
Nope.
But it was still – but you know what I mean? But he was written – like a hero. I don't think that necessarily the author thinks that he's a hero, but he was writing it from the perspective as if he was a hero, and I found that very interesting.
Especially since what he it seems like he's trying to do is take over.
Right. I just thought it was I kind of liked that twist to it because it wasn't I didn't feel like the author was trying to tell me that Darkseid was the hero. It was just sort of he was like writing it like what if he was the hero? This is what that like this is what the perspective of the story would be. Instead of the villain massacring all of these people, it was the villain heroically defending himself from all of these people. This is very – I thought it was very interesting.
So what is this sepulchre – how do you pronounce it? Sepulchre. What's this thing he's trying to build with his relic in the other box?
I assume whatever – he's trying to build something that helps him form a new apocalypse.
Okay.
I didn't know if it was a weapon. I didn't know if it was more detailed than that.
See, I wasn't sure if it was a weapon, if it was a place. I didn't know what he was trying to do.
That I'm not sure. Okay. All I know is that whatever it is, its purpose is.
And apparently, this Eschaton is some being. They said it's some being who is prophesied as a feast on the bones of the new gods. I'm guessing this is some creature from after the Source Wall fell.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right, I'm sure we'll find out about it more next issue, but I'm finding the story intriguing.
Oh, yeah, I am too. One thing I like is that it continues to be influenced by the Justice League title. It doesn't feel like it's completely shut off from what's going on in the wider DC story, and that's enjoyable.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Shazam number 3. So in this issue we get the origin of Kid King, and basically we find out he was a kid that was treated with cruelty by his parents, fell down a magical well into a new land, found a magical scepter, and created the Fun Lands. But like you predicted last issue, he's not a good guy.
I don't really think John's tried to hide that though. I don't feel clever for seeing that. I was actually a little bit surprised at how quickly he turned. It felt like he was clearly putting on a facade. That much was obvious, but he dropped it pretty quickly, pretty easily too. He's like, "Oh wait, Mary's 18. Screw this. I'm done pretending. Let's kill them."
I know.
It was abrupt. You couldn't roll with that one.
What's kind of cool is we're splitting the kids into teams of two, and they're going off to explore the different. Well, they're not going off to explore. They end up in some of the different lands. So we're gonna get to explore that more in the next issue. We're gonna have several stories going on with the different teams, breaking them apart and stuff. I have a feeling it's gonna go on for several issues, and I'm finding it kind of interesting to explore these lands.
It kind of feels like the ball is starting to get rolling a little bit on the story. I enjoyed this one because it kind of felt like it's been a little bit of a slow start. Like, I've enjoyed the first two, but we're kind of getting that wheel turning a little bit now. We're really going to kind of get some interesting stories start to build now that we've kind of gotten some of the setup out of the way.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited about this title. I like it.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Flash number 65. All right, Cletus, Williamson did a terrible job wrapping up the storyline.
So it's pretty par for the course.
Yeah, you're right.
I feel like this is usually I thought when it got to the end of this, I was like, of course it ended like this. Why? I don't know why I expected something. I was almost mad at myself for having expected a conclusion to this. Because this is always what happens with his Flash arcs. is that they don't really end. They really just kind of like, oh, you like that? Well, wait for this thing. And I'm like, but you didn't really give me a satisfying ending to this one. And then I know when I read the next one, you're not going to give a satisfying end to that. It's just going to lead into the next thing. I feel like he just writes these things in to keep himself employed. It's the only thing I can think of. It's like, no, you got to keep me around because my story's not done yet.
So we get Gotham Girl fights Batman and Flash until she exhausts her power and basically almost dies. And Flash and Batman are able to revive her and discover that she's been under influence of some drug, which we know is that Venom drug thing. And she doesn't remember what happens. Ultimately, we don't learn who or what is behind this.
It has to be Bane. The thing I didn't understand in this story is how Batman doesn't just immediately assume it's Bane.
I know.
It's not like Batman doesn't know that Bane is up to something. We know that Batman knows that Bane is. I mean, unless this story was... I will admit, it's unclear at what point in King's run this story is happening. But I'm pretty sure it's taken place post him figuring it out. Unless this whole story was supposed to take place right before Penguin approaches him. That's the only thing I can think of. Do you remember it giving a timeline of where it was at?
Nope, I don't remember.
So the only thing that makes sense why Batman wouldn't immediately go, it's Bane, is if it takes place before Penguin approaches him. Otherwise, I can't... He would have to know it's Bane. It's Venom. It's obviously Bane.
Yeah. And then the other thing that was dumb in this issue, the fight between Flash and Batman just felt forced. Didn't feel natural. And just plain dumb, in my opinion.
Why did they suddenly fight at the end? It was forced. It didn't even make sense. It was like, wait, why? What? And then Iris slapping Barry and then leaving him.
Yeah.
It's just like, what are you, like, all of this drama, but like, it doesn't make sense.
I know. And Iris and Barry just got together and went on an adventure and all of a sudden she's mad at him. I don't know. You're right. It didn't make any sense whatsoever. And the epilogue didn't make sense. All of a sudden, Batman and Superman's talk is so cryptic. There's a big mystery and we need to investigate everyone. I'm like, what mystery? You haven't told us anything. Why can't you trust anyone? I mean, it's so... You didn't give us anything.
I know. I agree.
Come on, elaborate a little bit. Why is Superman even there? What's leading to this big mystery? You can't trust anyone. You haven't told us anything. It's like me coming up to you with no context. Cletus, we have a big mystery here. We have to investigate everyone.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what?
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
That doesn't make any freaking sense.
The only thing that I found interesting was the sort of like moral of the story, which was that the cost of being a hero is that you save everybody but yourself. And I was like, okay, that's an interesting point to make. But, like, you did a horrible job going over that theme. It sort of felt pasted on at the end. I was like, that's a very interesting point that you spent almost no time talking about this entire comic.
Terrible.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a very interesting point that a better writer would have made the theme of the entire comic, and instead it was just sort of like, right at the end, it was like, and the price, the title... really was talking about this the whole time. And I was like, okay, but why didn't you show us that part then? Like, why wasn't the comic about that?
Exactly.
Why was the comic about Gotham Girl going on a rampage and not Batman and the Flash dealing with the personal ramifications of that? Like, that was... What a crap story. I was so mad at myself when I finished it. I was like, why did I expect something differently? Why did I expect it to end with a true conclusion? Of course it wasn't going to do that.
Well, hopefully we'll get a good story from Tom King.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. The Terrifics number 13. I was going to ask you, did you think this issue felt a little off?
In what way?
The story wasn't bad. I think it was the artwork. The artwork felt... I think it was done by a different person, wasn't it?
It was... The artwork was a little odd in that it felt a little too gritty for the Terrifics.
Okay, yeah. That was one of the things I have... Let me read what I wrote down in my notes. It was penciled by a different artist, and it felt more rough and not as crisp and clean as we're used to.
Yes, and, I would agree with that, yeah.
And it kind of, because it wasn't as crisp and clean as we're used to, the story felt a little off. Or when I was reading it, it felt just a little off.
I think that's a really good point.
Not that the story was bad, but it just felt not the same.
Oh no! I think you actually raise a really good point there. I mean, the art doesn't quite match the tone of the book as a whole. The book is ultimately a wacky Fantastic Four-esque adventure. I mean, the whole thing. The issue is a pretty upbeat issue, really. The gang's getting together. They're going off. The Mr. and Mrs. Terrific are running through dimensions. But then the art is just like, it's not bad artwork. It's just not quite the right, like, it doesn't match the tone of the story. I thought that was, yeah, so I would agree with that. I thought that the art is fine. It's just not the right style for this book.
Yeah. That's probably what I mean by it. It just felt a little off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we had some good stuff in it. I love that Rex and Plastic Man's son hit it off. I thought that was freaking hilarious. It's like they teamed up against him. And then Plastic Man's like, it's like he doesn't even notice it. I thought that was funny. Ultimately, nothing really happens in this issue. Like you said, we see Michael and Paula on the run. The Dreadfuls were sure on their heels quickly between dimensions. I would like to have got to visit some of the dimensions a little more, and the other stuff, basically the rest of the team was just getting together to go find them, so this felt like it felt sort of like a filler issue, but it wasn't a filler issue because we're in the middle of a story, but...
It's an issue that would read extremely well in the collected version.
Yes.
Because it's just continuing, it's naturally continuing the story, but it itself, isolated... Like you said, nothing happens.
Yeah.
In this. If you're reading it back to back to back, this issue is totally fine because it's clearly continuing from the previous issue and it's leading into the next one. But yeah, no, I agree. As a single issue, it's nothing.
And
just
it might feel a little off in a collected version because of the artwork. Especially if it jumps back into the regular artwork next issue like I'm hoping.
Yeah.
But it was fine.
Yeah.
I love the Terrific, so.
I am very glad that this title has hung around. I think all of the other ones that it launched with have gotten canceled already.
I think so,
too. If I'm not mistaken. I mean, they weren't very good.
No. This was the best out of them.
I feel like everybody kind of knew that going into it. I felt like DC was the only one that didn't know that those other ones were all destined to bomb.
Well, there's a lot of stuff DC hasn't been getting recently, and... You said it a few episodes ago. There needs to be some leadership change at the top. They haven't changed the leadership that needs to be changed yet.
Yep.
And once that happens, I think we're going to see a new DC and hopefully a better DC.
Yeah.
But that hasn't happened yet.
I'm not going to lie, man. Didio's probably going to have to retire. I really think that's the only way that happens. That dude is so entrenched.
All right, well...
I don't mean to be bleak, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, we've stated our opinions about Didio many a time, so...
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our last issue for this week, Wonder Woman number 65. So Wonder Woman seeks out Nemesis to dissuade her from helping Veronica Kale. And when she finds Nemesis' secret lair, Wonder Woman discovers that Nemesis is controlling Veronica Kale, not the other way around. I found that very interesting.
I did too. My only complaint with this issue was that I thought it was extremely fast-paced. especially given that the setup just happened last issue.
Yeah, it did.
Turned around and resolved it this year, which isn't, it's not a bad thing, but I was just shocked at how fast it was. Just like last issue, she finds Nemesis, fights her, and Kale threatens to sue. And then this issue, we find out that it's actually Nemesis controlling Kale, and Wonder Woman goes and fixes that this issue. And it was like, whoa. I mean, it really felt, even at the beginning of this issue, it leads in with that press con, like the news talking about it, seeming like this is going to be a big build-up to a story, and then it was like, no, actually, this is a short story.
But it launches Wonder Woman onto another mission.
Which is fine. That's fine. I'm really surprised that this all happened within the course of two issues. I really thought, I like the story, and I really like the way Wilson chose Wonder Woman to resolve this with a hug.
Yeah.
Isn't that great? I mean, that was so great. I was like, that's awesome. That is a great way to like make it a truly Wonder Woman way to resolve it.
Yep.
It really felt like there could have been another issue in between this, like stretch that story out one more issue, and I'd have been fine with that. Like, I think there was enough there.
Yeah, there
maybe.
Was.
I don't know.
There
maybe,
was enough
I mean,
here.
Maybe that was the thing. Maybe she did have an extra issue and she looked at it and was like, this isn't that necessary. And so she just cut out the unnecessary part.
In which case,
I respect that. So I don't know. I enjoyed it. I was just surprised when I read it. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. I guess we're done with that.
I am excited about Wonder Woman and Aphrodite teaming up. I'm excited to find out more answers about what's happening with Olympus, what's happening with Themyscira. So I am excited about finding out some answers on that. Now, I was going to ask you, was it just me, or did Steve Trevor seem a little whiny in this issue?
A little bit. I don't know. It
felt weird to me that he would just be waiting around Wonder Woman's place waiting for her to come back. I figured he'd be off doing his Steve Trevor thing.
I kind of liked the point, though, that they did with that, was that he waits around so that she has something to come back to kind of keep her grounded.
Yeah, that's cool.
Also, let's be honest, the reason I like that is because they're frequently the other way around. There usually is a woman waiting, like Iris. Iris is usually waiting at home for Barry to get back. I don't know. I think I like the fact that, you know, Wilson writes it the other way around too, that the man is there waiting.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. In real life, I've seen that kind of thing before too. So yeah. It's, you know, it's not always the other way around. Sometimes the guy is waiting at home. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Are you looking for a podcast that's a little bit out of the ordinary, a little bit crazy, and a little bit on the rambunctious side? Well, have I got something for you. It's called Vitamin Geek Podcast. My name's Corey Keelan. I'm the host and creator of Vitamin Geek Podcast, and I'm here to invite you to listen to my show. Each episode, I'm coming to you with whatever I think is important at the time. Maybe it's a new movie, maybe it's a comic book, maybe it's horror, maybe it's drag queens, who knows? I love to talk, and I'd just love to get you guys involved in the conversation. I invite you all to check out my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/vitamingeekpodcast. I would love to hear your feedback. So please join me and check us out here, Vitamin Geek Podcast, here on the ESO Network.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 4, Episode 13. What's so funny about truth, justice, and the American way? So this episode opens up with Martian Manhunter visiting Manchester Black in prison. Manchester Black takes advantage of the situation by breaking out of prison with the help of his new team, the Elite. So we have Manchester Black, the Hat, Menagerie, and one of the Moray. I gotta tell you, I love the Hat.
Yeah, he was really cool.
He was a really cool character in this episode.
I'm very glad that they introduced him into the show. Just because, like, that was his power set and the effects that they did with him were very, very cool.
They were cool. And he's got a kind of a great personality for a bad guy.
Yeah.
So we see Manchester Black and his elite team wasting no time in spreading their signature brand of terror in National City by murdering 13 soldiers and sharing the video to social media. I think this episode did a great job of proving that the elite are a really big threat.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the team that they built. I mean, they did it really quickly, too.
Yeah, they did. They didn't waste any time, which was good because, you know, it could have been a lot more boring if we had a slow build to the team.
Yeah, I agree.
Just jumping right in, so I didn't have any problem with that. So in this episode, we see John struggle to uphold his vow of pacifism during this episode. Kara points out that even Marin joined the fight against Rain, and of course, in the end, we see John start using his powers, which is something we want to see anyway. So,
yeah, I have to admit, I didn't feel like I'm very glad that it looks like Martian Manhunter is going to be Martian Manhunter again. it didn't really feel like the episode explained that well enough, though. It felt kind of like, well, we've painted ourselves into a corner and we need to write out of it. He's just going to fight again, which I'm fine with. But like they've gone all, like, two thirds of the season with him being passive and, you know, trying to take the peaceful route. And then they're like, he's just going to punch guys again.
I have no problem with that.
I don't either, but I'm not gonna pretend like it wasn't lazy either.
All right, I gotta tell you, I love seeing the Fortress in Solitude in this episode. Brainy's jealousy of Keelix was freaking hilarious. I wish they could start using the Fortress of Solitude more as their headquarters.
I like it, however, I get why they don't, because you have to use the DEO. And splitting between the two would be...
Yeah, I understand that, but right now, Supergirl's not even going to the DEO because she's not wanted there, so I'm sure that's going to get resolved by the end of the season, but I don't know. I just think it's cool seeing the Fortress of Solitude.
One thing that I'm intrigued but confused by is, so following the satellite launch and they thwart that, Alex goes to Lena. It's like, you're right, the government, something is going on weird with the, like, they're up to something that's not good. And they agree to work together. But then that also was like, wait, then if Lena knows this also, why is she working for them? That I thought was odd because it didn't feel like the show had previously suggested that Lena thought something was fishy. And then this issue they did, and I was like, well, okay, why would she agree to the contract? Why would she agree to the contract at the cost of breaking up with Jimmy? Or James, sorry.
I don't know.
Did you wonder? I when I saw that, I was like, okay, I mean, I'm fine with the story, but it didn't feel like they had set that up previously.
My feeling is that Lena's got her own agenda, and it's just using the government contract to get what she needs done.
I agree, but it also felt like the show was saying that she suspected something, but I don't feel like the show did actually establish that.
I don't think they established it before this episode. I'm going to agree with you on that. I think it's probably something they came up with later.
Yeah, I would agree there. I also, like, how is this the first... the other thing, when that scene happened, I was like, come on, Alex, like, you have to have thought something was weird before that. Like, this was the thing that you're like, oh, something's not right here.
President Baker continues to show that he's an antagonist, especially with his launch of his anti-alien satellite, not telling anybody about it, pretty much.
But even worse, naming the Agent of Liberty as the director of
Alien Affairs.
Alien Affairs.
I know.
Good Lord.
I know. That's basically showing your true colors right there, buddy.
Yeah.
So that
what's interesting though is I don't think it doesn't seem entirely clear that he actually necessarily agrees with him. I don't think he does totally agree with Lockwood. I think he's like that sort of soulless politician that really only cares about poll numbers and winning.
Yeah, I agree.
It kind of feels like he's doing it not because he believes, like, that's almost worse. Like, he's not doing these things because he believes in it. He's doing it because he thinks that's what will keep him elected or get him reelected.
Yep.
This was good, though. I really like the continuing buildup of pressure between the alien rights side and then the liberty side on the other. The pot is boiling, and I really like how the show is building the tension up between those two sides.
Yeah, me too. One thing that's been absent, and I don't know what they're planning on doing it with it, was what's going on with the Russian Supergirl? Are they saving that for next season?
They have to be. I feel like we're too deep into the season at this point for it to be a satisfying conclusion to her. Right?
Yeah, I would think so too. I've been waiting for them to break out that story. But it feels like they're planning. To me, it felt like they were planning on doing something this season with it. Now I'm wondering if they're not. But then I got the feeling that she may appear and make Supergirl look bad to the United States or something. And who knows? Maybe they're going to pull it out at the end of the season and continue it on to the next season.
It feels like it's somewhere in the middle. It feels like she's definitely going to factor in somehow. She has to. But that I feel like she has to carry over to next season. They've just not done enough with that character to just suddenly make her the conclusion to the season would be similar to season one, where season one didn't really truly have a build-up and they sort of forced one at the end. It would be similar to that. But this one has a clear arc. Like, the Ben Lockwood Agent of Liberty arc is a really good arc, first off, and has been building up really well. Like, they have an ideal ending, a very satisfying ending already built in. They just need to keep going with it. So, like, I don't feel like she's necessary for this season. But part of me wonders if they were, and I almost wonder if they were going to do something with her and it changed their mind.
That could be.
I really feel like that's...
Because we saw her a lot more towards the beginning of the season, and then all of a sudden we haven't seen anything.
I have no idea. But part of me wonders if they really were going to do something much more with that character and then realized how good the story they had was and just decided to stick with that instead.
That could be. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Arrow Season 7, Episode 14, Brothers and Sisters. So this episode opens up with Felicity waking up from a nightmare where Diaz is chasing her through the forest, threatening her loved ones. Felicity's anxiety seems to be a theme we see running through this episode, something that even her daughter in the future brings up. With the reveal of the Ghost Initiative by Diggle, Felicity becomes even more certain that she wants to kill Diaz.
But then she doesn't.
As far as we know.
True. I'm pretty confident that wasn't her.
I figured it probably wasn't her either. I'm just curious who it was.
I was slightly annoyed when she was at that again. I was like, oh, come. And then when Diaz was like, we've already been over this. It's like, thank you. At least somebody on the show acknowledges the pointlessness of this story. It was just I get why she is so threatened by him, and I get her desire to eliminate that threat permanently. Like, I understand that, but we've also seen that storyline at least two or three times.
Just
that was the thing. I was just kind of, come on. Like, we know she's not going to do it. I did really like this episode, though. I liked seeing the suicide. Let's be real. It's the Suicide Squad in action. It is a much better squad than the last time they had one.
Yes.
On the show. I like Dante. I'm a little bit surprised at what they're doing with him. Because I didn't really know. I didn't really know what the direction they were going to go with him. And having him kind of, as he seems to be, like a businessman, which I think we both expected, but also an elite assassin, he has to be, is interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I'm thinking he is ultimately going to be the villain of the season, right?
Yeah, well, at least for the last part of the season. It seems like we've gotten several different story arcs in this. And he feels like he's the story arc for the end of the season, or to the end of the season.
I really like the way they've structured this season. Another reason I'm disappointed that we're only getting 10 episodes is I really like what the showrunner has done for this season. I would have loved more seasons like this for Arrow.
Yeah, they did a great job of it. I mean, we had the story arc with Oliver in prison. Then we had the story arc with the killer. Now we have the story arc with Dante. So we basically had three different story arcs.
Yeah.
Granted, the first one went kind of longer than the second one. And then this last part of the season feels like it's going to be about the same length as the beginning story arc. But I'm liking it.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed this episode. Now I'm really curious to find out why Emiko is working with Dante, because it feels like Dante is the one responsible for her mom's murder.
Yeah, so, I know. That's interesting. But she might not know that, though.
Oh, she clearly can't know that. Yeah, I'm very intrigued. I liked this episode quite a bit.
I'm curious who killed Diaz. I
believe it was Dante, or not. If not him, it was somebody within working his organization. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I was guessing that too, but I was wondering, the other thing was, I wonder if they want us to think that and it's actually somebody from Team Arrow. Would that be an interesting twist?
That was a pretty brutal way for his character to go out, too.
I know. I wonder if Laurel had something to do with that, or, you know, I was just curious. I was like, they might make us think it's Dante, but wouldn't it be interesting if it was somebody from Team Arrow that took him out?
Do you think he's dead?
I don't know if he's dead either.
That's what I wasn't sure about either.
He may
the
just
other
be
reason,
burnt.
The reason I'm questioning that is because this episode, even though this Dante is not the same as the one that we saw in the Rebirth comics, I still think they're adapting the Ninth Circle, because his henchman that we see in this is named Virgil, which is another allusion to Dante's Inferno. And then we know in the comics, one thing they do to those people is they burn them. You know what I mean? I feel like it's still not super clear, but I am pretty sure they are in some way, not exactly, but they are in some way adapting the Ninth Circle. And I'm really curious to see where they go with that.
Yeah. It does feel like they are adapting the Ninth Circle. And I am very intrigued where they're going with the storyline too. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week, Black Lightning, Season 2, Episode 14, The Book of Secrets, Chapter 4, Original Sin. Man, their titles are not getting any shorter. All right, Cletus, I have to tell you, I was not expecting the return of Lala in this episode.
Lala came out of nowhere. When he popped up in the, like, previously on Black Lightning, and he popped up, I was like, wait, what?
I know, that's
more
exactly
story with him.
That's now, exactly what I thought too when I saw the opening. I was like, whoa, more Lala.
Don't get me wrong, it was really good. Like, I loved finally getting an explanation for how he comes back exactly. That was really weird and cool. I liked the story a lot that they told with him. I am baffled that they waited like 14 episodes since the last time we've seen him. That is such a big gap. And you know who we still haven't seen is that assassin from the mid-season finale. That's who I thought was going to be popping up in this story.
Nope.
From the previews for it, and it wasn't. It was Lala. And I'm like, what are you doing? What's this show doing? I'm so, like, it was so good, but like, I can't believe they waited this long to pull him back.
Yeah, I'm glad they did, though.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So, we see Lala spends most of the episode trying to piece together what happened to his friend Earl. And once Lala realizes he was the one who killed Earl, the tattoo of Earl appeared on his body. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, apparently he blocked that out for some reason.
He's a very interesting character. And this episode only made him that much more intriguing. Like, I really like his story that they're telling with it, and when it was finished, I was like, why did I have to wait so long to get more with this guy?
But that's the thing that Black Lightning is doing well that some of the other CW shows aren't doing. They are mixing up their villains and mixing up the story, so they're not getting the same thing like in Flash over and over and over the whole season.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Yeah. There doesn't feel like there's the Black Lightning formula like there is with, like, you know, like there's a clear formula with the Flash, so much so that the characters within the show routinely refer to it, and it's kind of like, then write something different.
Yeah.
So I have to agree with you completely there. Black Lightning, there's not really a, it doesn't feel like there's really a formula with the show. It just always feels like the next chapter in the story. And what, and if that means that you're pulling a character that hasn't been in the show for half of a season, that's fine, because that's the next time that he pops up in the story.
Yeah, it's kind of like a comic book.
A well-written comic book.
Black Lightning has been great with, you know, mixing things up and not, I mean, Tobias is a great villain, but ultimately Black Lightning's only gone up against him once.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And I have to also say, as weird as it was that they took so long to bring Lala back, it made sense within the story because he had to be reconstituted from being blown up.
I know.
And so it's like, okay, like I'm frustrated that it took so long, but I'm glad that you did bring him back because his story was not satisfactorily wrapped up, and it makes complete sense within the story why it would take that long. So it was like, you know what? I'm a little bit frustrated, but I understand, and you guys have proven me wrong. You know what you're doing.
Now, Agent O'Dell really showed his villainous side this week when he tells Lynn that the Pod Kids are no better than weapons and compares them to a trained dog. Then we see him lock her out of the facility because he didn't like how she was performing the experiments. And then we also see that he's been spying on the Pierce family and knows their secret. Oh, fascinating.
I like him as a character because he's antagonistic, but he doesn't necessarily feel completely villainous either.
Right.
He's kind of like a Waller type character.
Yes.
Like, if it was Amanda Waller, it would fit perfectly.
Do you think Agent O'Dell suspects Gambi's still alive? Or maybe he hasn't... You don't think he's figured that out yet?
I don't think he knows Gambi's alive. But he clearly knows everything else about the Black Lightning family, though.
Yeah. I'm sure it's only a matter of time before he figures it out. Because Agent O'Dell now knows about the Pierce family secret... Do you see that by the end of the season, he's going to die at Gambi's hand?
I would not be shocked if he dies by the end of the season, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting now, now that he knows the Pierce family secret.
I also, however, on the other hand, I also wouldn't be surprised if they continue using him as a Waller-type character that doesn't go away and just kind of remains a thorn in the side. I could see it going either way.
Yeah, I could see that, too.
Almost a necessary evil, kind of like Waller, where she's like, none of the heroes like her, but they also, like, she kind of has to, she's a necessary evil. She kind of has to be around.
Yeah. And finally, we get some answers about Grace Choi this week, too. When we see Thunder is able to track her down, we learn that she's some sort of shapeshifter because she's disguised as an old man.
That was very interesting. I have to admit, I wasn't sure where they were going with her powers. Because they had made it seem so much like she had that silver stuff in her that I wasn't sure what they were doing. So the shapeshifting was cool.
That was cool. What was up with that dead deer, though?
That was pretty messed up.
Was she eating it? Or I didn't understand why it was there.
It kind of, the implication seemed to be that she had to, like, feast on.
Can't you, like, go down to your local grocery store and get some groceries?
It's got to be fresh, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I
hope they explain that more. That was weird. The other thing I was wondering, is she just being disguised as the old man, or is she actually just, is she really just the old man? Or was that a disguise? Is she really Grace, or is she really the old man? I wasn't sure about that either.
Yeah, that, I don't know.
Wouldn't that be freaky if she was really the old man and wasn't Grace at all?
Or what I'm wondering, if that old man is the adoptive dad or whoever it was.
And they're combined.
Like, she really is. Like, that whole family that the record has, that Gambi's record that he found of her, if she's just all of them.
Ooh, that somehow would be, that would be weird, wouldn't it?
It would be weird, but it would be, there was, I don't know if you've seen the FX show Legion at all.
Nope.
It's an X-Men show, and they're all like bizarre X-Men, that most of which don't exist in the comics, but one of them is this guy who has like a female counterpart living inside of him, and it's like most of the time it's the guy, but then like the girl, like they're in one body, but then the girl like comes out, and then they're both existing at the same time.
So it's two different people, but they're existing at the same time. That reminds me, have you ever seen Heroes?
No.
There was a character in that that had a twin, and she would flip-flop between the personalities of the twin. You know, her main role, but then sometimes she'd turn into her twin, and her twin would do stuff, and she wouldn't realize what was going on until, you know, when she came back. Her twin would do stuff, and she'd get blamed for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's all very. I'm very intrigued by what they're going to do with that character, because I could see them going a lot of different directions with it.
Yeah, I do too. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week: Flash, Season 5, Episode 15, King Shark versus Gorilla Grodd. So the episode starts off with Cisco announcing that the metahuman cure is finished. Well, not really. It starts off with an unnecessary scene of Gorilla Grodd and a captured Flash in excess before jumping 12 hours earlier.
How many times when I was watching this, I told my girlfriend, I was like, I feel like half of the episodes this season have started this way.
I don't know why, because
I don't get it either, because it's like, it doesn't do it. It doesn't do anything for me. It didn't. I already know what the episode. I already know the episode is about Gorilla Grodd and King Shark fighting. There wasn't something like twisty about that scene.
Yeah, there's no reason they needed to show that at the beginning of the episode. We could have just started off with Cisco announcing his Medicare.
I don't understand why they keep using that device, because most of the time it's not worth it. Like, no. It doesn't set up something like, ooh, what's this about? Like, I don't, like, all it does is, like, great, now I know part of the scene that's gonna...
Yeah, I feel the same way with you, because I thought the same thing. I was like, why are they showing this for? I don't need to see it. I'm going to watch the whole episode anyways.
I have to admit, this one I particularly didn't like, because I knew that you could pretty safely guess that whatever plan Team Flash was going to come up with wouldn't work, because that's what happens every episode. But it was like you knew that the plan that they had to go attack Gorilla Grodd wasn't going to work, because you had already seen that scene. You might not have known at the beginning of the episode that King Shark was going to be fighting for the good guys, right?
Right.
But by the time you got – you knew that he was going to turn back into King Shark, and you knew that he was going to fight Gorilla. It did actually spoil – the end of the episode, because it took the stakes away. Like, it, the show built up, it was like, will he turn back? I don't know, I'm not sure. You knew that they would fail, and you knew that he would turn back into King Shark to fight Grodd. Why would you do that? It didn't benefit the episode. It hindered the episode.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can't argue anything.
Yeah.
I can't say it was cool seeing Lilac guest appear in this episode.
Yeah, I agree. That was cool. I have to admit, though, it felt like when he escaped, that felt like Argus really dropped the ball on that. That was way too easy for him to get out.
Yeah. It's not going to be so easy for Gorilla Grodd to get out next time, though.
Yeah.
So.
I keep feeling like they're building Grodd up to be... At some point, I would love for him to be the villain. Not for a season, because I think we agree we don't want a full season villain in The Flash anymore.
No.
But I would love for him to be a 6 or 7 episode villain. They keep making him stronger and stronger. The end result of this episode is that Grodd's mental capacity is growing exponentially.
Yeah.
So, like, I would love to see that. But I can't help but feel like he's just going to be another one episode villain again.
Yeah.
Just a little bit frustrating.
It is frustrating. I want to see this arc with him, too. Not a whole season, though. They've got to change the formula with Flash. Or, you know, go away from the formula. They need to start doing arcs like they're doing in Arrow and Black Lightning.
I would like it a lot, too, just because, like, I am so done with Barry learning a life lesson every episode. It's been, but then what frustrates me is that they treat him simultaneously as a seasoned vet, which he is, and yet also still learning new things every, like, oh, I've learned this time I need to, you know, not betray my teammates' trust and make a unilateral decision. I'm like, you didn't learn this in the previous 5 years of your career as the Flash? Like, at some point, Barry needs to just, like, just let him be the freaking Flash. Like, that's one thing Arrow has done very well throughout its run, is that, I mean, occasionally Oliver will learn, you know, Oliver's makes more sense because he is so scarred and changed by his trauma on the island for 5 years that it takes that much time for him to work through that and kind of become human again. But he's still, like, as for the most part, is like, he's the Green Arrow. He just does it. The Flash feels like constantly like he's still like only 80% the Flash. And then another episode happens, now he's 81% the Flash. And then he's 82% the Flash. And it's like, just come on.
At the end of the episode, we got Barry apologizing to Cisco and Caitlin.
Again.
And this time he's like, well, we should offer this cure to Cicada. I'm thinking to myself, I don't see Cicada wanting to take his ability to kill metahumans away.
It's not going to work. We both know it's not going to work. And this is also similar to getting the flash forward thing that they keep reusing. They've done this. They've overused this ending this season too. How many episodes have we seen where it ends with like, this is the solution to beat Cicada? This has got to have been like the eighth or ninth time we've seen it end with Barry dropping a bombshell of like, this is what we're going to do. This will be the thing. We've seen that when it was like, we need to save his daughter. And then it was, you know, it was, we need to get the knife or something. Like, this has happened multiple times. And we know it's not going to work again. I'm very frustrated. I also like the fight scene between King Shark and Gorilla Grodd was really cool. The episode itself felt a little bit underwhelming. Like, I was like, this is not as good of an episode as I would have wanted for King Shark versus Gorilla Grodd.
Yeah.
It kind of felt tacked on a little bit.
Yeah, I'm afraid to say I have to agree with you on that. I do got to say, it was great seeing Joe back from a sabbatical.
Yes.
And I think they did a great job of explaining his absence. Of course, it would have been nice if they would have explained it better before he came back.
Yeah. Joe was, having Joe back on the show was awesome. I feel like this episode could have been improved if they had introduced the threat of Grodd last episode. Like, maybe the team is unaware of it, but it just felt like it was too much to do in one. Like, introducing that Grodd escaped and was a threat again, and then also doing King Shark's story all in one episode made it feel so unsatisfying. I would have liked, like, I feel like it would have been better if we had gotten, like, Grodd is back in a previous episode. The king, that maybe they don't know about it, and then we get that. I don't know. So there's had to have been something that you could have done to make this a little bit more satisfying. Like, Grodd really just felt like, he didn't even feel like it needed to be Grodd. It felt like it was Grodd because that was the coolest matchup between the two. Which was, it was. In the show's defense, the best part of the episode was Grodd versus King Shark. That was awesome. I'm not going to lie. That was great. But everything else around it wasn't very good. Yeah. I don't know. I just, the show really is good. I hate to say it because I like The Flash, but it just feels super stale. And it feels like it's a easier fix than the writers are making it.
Yeah. I agree with you. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Doom Patrol, Season 1, Episode 4, Cult Patrol. This week's Doom Patrol was packed with lots of goodies. To start off the episode, we get a new character named Elliot, whose birthdays we get to see over the years. And unfortunately for Elliot, his mother is a whacked out member of the Cult of the Unwritten Book. And she kills his father and has written this book all over his body that's supposed to bring about the apocalypse when it's read. I thought it was a really interesting concept. And the magician guy they brought in, Willoughby Kipling, Kip, I'm just going to call him Kip. He felt even more of a loser than John Constantine.
He was like John Constantine, but even weirder, which is perfect for Doom Patrol. It was like, what if we had John Constantine on the show, but made him like as weird and bizarre as the Doom Patrol is? That's this is what we got.
Yeah. I've seen the actor who plays Kip before, but I couldn't place where I'd seen him, what I'd seen him in. But making the doorway with the cigarette, tracking down a location with gum. his magic is very unconventional, but it's freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
We see the Doom Patrol team rescue Elliot, bring him back to the mansion. But we also get to see Robot Man and Jane as her hammerhead personality track down Elliot's mother, who, you know, when they get there, they end up going to another dimension. That's one thing I love about Doom Patrol. They keep going to these other weird dimensions. And all the buildings in that other dimension just looked like they were fake.
Well, and we see it's actually in the snow globe.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is in the snow globe. Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
That world was so weird. It was so perfectly weird. The set design, the costume design of this show is just phenomenal. I mean, it is so bizarre and just perfect for the tone of the show.
And then his mother is like queen, and her husband she killed earlier in the episode is like sitting in the throne next to her dead. I was like, okay. Yeah. I just found that freaking hilarious that, oh yeah, we're still together even though he's dead. I love the fact, this is the first episode we've had a Doom Patrol which basically had a cliffhanger ending. I mean, all of them seem to, I can't say it was not the only cliffhanger we have, but felt more like a two-parter episode.
That, yeah, I would agree with that. It was the first one that felt like it wasn't, not necessarily a complete story, but didn't really have a conclusion.
Yeah.
At the end of it. I mean, that you could kind of say that about the pilot, but the pilot still had something of an arc to it with Robot Man.
Right, it did.
And this one, not in a bad way, but this one was clearly unfinished. This was clearly just like half of a story.
Exactly. I like the fact we got to learn more about Negative Man's energy being in that flashback sequence where the chief tries to communicate with him. That was interesting.
Yeah.
And I loved how Cyborg had already mapped 37 dimensions. And I'm hoping they'll build that into future episodes. We get to learn more about these different dimensions he's mapping.
I'm sure we will. I mean, it wouldn't be the Doom Patrol if they don't.
And we get the cliffhanger at the end where we get that weird eye in the sky. So I'm loving Doom Patrol.
I know it's so good, and you know it's going to get even weirder next episode. Like however they defeat that eye is going to be weird. Like it's not going to be your standard superhero fare.
Nope, it's not.
And one thing I want to mention real quick that I liked is we finally got Elastigirl, woman. I can never remember which one it is, but we finally got her stretching.
Yes,
it not just her blobbing. It was like, yes, like that's kind of what I was pretty sure we were gonna get that at some point. But I was very excited when it looks like she's kind of starting to learn to control it, not just like control it in maintaining her form, but like utilize it
for some other purpose besides becoming a blob.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was happy to see that too. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Did you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, we had so much to review this week. One of the things we weren't able to cover was Martian Manhunter 3, issue 3. Really good. I personally really enjoyed it. It goes into not his origin so much as, like, his beginning history on Earth, like when he gets there and why he adapts the John Jones persona. Really good issue. I continue to really enjoy that series.
That's good. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it's on my list of stuff to read. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about Captain Marvel. Went and saw it yesterday. It was freaking awesome. And I know you, Cletus, you probably saw it opening night, didn't you?
I did, and it was amazing. I really enjoyed that movie. Very, very good. I highly recommend it.
I highly recommend it, too. And I loved how they tied it into the Infinity War storyline, and actually how it ties back into the beginning of the Marvel 10-year run, I think.
It does. That it ties into some of the early Avenger storylines. It ties into Guardians in a couple ways, which was really cool.
Yeah.
It continued. The best thing that it did, which what I think people expected, is that it really continued to expand the galaxy around Earth, like the, you know, getting more into the space stuff and really expanding that world more.
Yeah,
it was really cool. Adding the Skrulls in, getting more into the Kree than we've seen them a couple times, but really developing them more too. Really, really cool stuff.
Really cool stuff. Loved it. Highly recommend it. It's going to make a lot of money.
As it should. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great.
Right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right. Coming up next week, we'll be talking Adventures of the Super Sons, Batman, Doomsday Clock, finally, Green Arrow number 50, so we'll wrap up that series, Justice League, the Green Lantern, Young Justice, and of course the CW shows, and Doom Patrol. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.